This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at Will Pruitt and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, what's making us happy in wrestling this week? Featuring Daniel Bryan, New Japan Pro Wrestling in Long Beach, California, and more. So, Jake, I normally end the show this way, so it feels a little weird to start the show this way, but there is just so much joy this week that I have to. Jake, what's making you happy in wrestling this week?
You know, there isn't a whole lot making me unhappy for a change. Like, it was a pretty good week, but I mean, obviously, you have to, you know, the big highlight was Tuesday with Daniel Bryan. And I think that's basically the default answer for everybody this week, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's making the world happy. I can't imagine someone not feeling joy upon seeing Daniel Bryan. Just like the smile on his face on Tuesday night, the speech he gave at the top of the show, all of that, like someone not just, you know, feeling joy. And if you're me and you cry at wrestling on the reg, cry, like tearing up watching it, because it was an emotional speech. It was really something to see Daniel kind of get to come back that way. And one of the things I loved about how it was done, WWE separated doing the angle and giving Bryan the real moment to come back. And I like that they bookended the show that way. And I like that they didn't make it so you had to deal with Bryan getting beat up at the very end of his welcome back moment.
Yeah, I thought the show opened on a real high note. And I think the promo was as good as anybody could have anticipated it would be, maybe even better. You know, it certainly was better than my expectations. I wasn't even sure how, you know, he would get through it, but he managed to stay mostly extremely positive. You know, he got emotional a couple of times, but I mean, it would have been easy to forgive him for being a blubbering mess, and yet he went out there and he was mostly just pretty excited. So I was blown away by his composure, and he still managed to, you know, set a pretty high bar for other baby faces in the company. You know, there's nobody that comes across more sincere and more deserving of being where he is than Bryan. And I think it's something that a lot of other people who aspire to be top baby faces in the company should look at. You know, here's a guy who, you know, had to fight through real adversity, and even before that, still, you know, managed to have a level of sincerity and reality around him that people just believed in him. And I think other people should try to emulate it as best they can.
Do you think this, like, adds depth to his connection with the fans? Like, not that I would ever say the two years off from the ring aren't a bad thing, because I'm sure they've been very difficult for him and that this has been an ordeal. But do you think that one of the positives that coming out of it is when fans see him wrestle now, they'll realize how amazing it is to get to see Daniel Bryan wrestle and truly be grateful for that moment each and every time?
Well, I hope so. I mean, it sure seemed like people were, you know, coming out of their seats for even just watching him throw some kicks and some drop kicks.
Those were some drop kicks, though.
It was, yeah.
Oh,
it was,
man.
It was an experience, you know, in jeans, no less. You know, he was just out there throwing them out there.
The height he was getting on those. Like, I was just like, wow, he's coming in hot on the, like, straight to the faces of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, and legitimately coming in faster, I think, than anyone expected.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell he's in fantastic shape. I mean, having that amount of time off has probably let him heal up a lot of other, I guess, non-concussion related injuries. You know, I think he had some shoulder issues, and he was, you know, fighting through some other fatigue related issues with muscle and, you know, your knees, and I'm sure your ankles and everything else probably get banged up just in the normal course of being a pro wrestler. But you know, he looked sharp, and I'm sure, you know, this first couple of months back will be probably the best Daniel Bryan we may have ever seen in WWE, because I think he came into the company, you know, hurt, and then he basically just worked hurt for years until it got to the point where, you know, he just had to step away. And so I'm excited for the Daniel Bryan we're going to see now, because I think, you know, from the point that he started wrestling, he never had the kind of time off that it takes for your body to heal. And I think this is that's who he is today. You know, having 2 years off and spending a lot of time at home, you know, building a new family and everything, I'm sure he feels about as good as he's ever felt as an adult.
Well, and he's talked, I know, they've kind of hinted around it. He and his wife, Brie, on like Instagram and things, like doing Q&As about basically Brian's been in the ring. He has been training. Like, they haven't been allowed to post it or anything, but I think he mentioned on one of them, like, on like some Instagram video at one point, like, oh yeah, we can't show that because I took a bump, basically. Like, so yeah. He's been in the ring and been working. So I think we're seeing, like you just said, a really healthy Daniel Bryan who is able to clear up nagging injuries, who also, I don't think ever let himself get out of it in ring shape. Like performing in front of a crowd is obviously different, but never let himself get out of the habits he had being in the ring. And I echo your sentiment on we might be seeing the best, the most fit, the most kind of the healthiest Daniel Bryan that we've seen yet in WWE. And that's going to be something amazing. So it looks like his WrestleMania match, it's the tag match. It's Brian and Shane against Sammy and Kevin. And Jake, the thing that excites me about this, Daniel Bryan's the best hot tag guy in wrestling, maybe ever. Like, he wins the Ricky Morton Award for hot tags.
Yeah, he's you're just calling back to the Team Hell No days. He was fantastic.
Which you would almost expect him to be the guy that took all of the abuse for that team, and Kane came in with the hot tags, but the formula, those guys worked, especially in those the matches with the Shield that got Brian over to like megastar level out of nowhere. Those were basically building up to Brian hot tags and just absolute fire in the ring.
Yeah. And he delivered, you know, every time. So yeah. I'm assuming the formula for this match will be, you know, Shane taking the bulk of the offense and Brian getting the mega comeback. You know, like, that makes the most sense to me. But I can't say that that's the way it's going to turn out for sure. But it is what it is.
How many times do you think Shane McMahon fixes his shirt mid-match? That's actually, like, of all the Shane McMahon things I love, that is the habit that is really noticeable once you see it, that you can't unsee him doing it.
Well, I mean, it's not as bad as when Bully Ray was like at his biggest in TNA, and he would be constantly like pulling up his pants all match.
Yeah.
So there was that. But the Shane shirt adjustment is pretty bad, especially now that he's on button ups and those kind of have a tendency to twist around on you.
Yeah. It's not a great idea in the ring, but Shane loves those faux baseball jerseys. He is, as they say, the money. So,
did you? The question for you: Did you get nervous watching him take those bumps on Tuesday night, or were you, I guess, more trusting in the doctors and physicians? Because I still had that, like, oh God, I'm still nervous about watching this kind of moment while I was covering the show.
At first, I was just surprised that they had him take those bumps because he was bumping hard. Like, I was like, oh, they're going all in. Oh my God, they're going to do the apron powerbomb. Like, I was surprised at how brutal it got, but once I saw it, like the first thing I saw, I was like, ooh, okay. And then it kind of snapped in for me and I didn't get nervous for the rest of it. I thought, okay, I'm going to trust that they are the WWE wouldn't have him taking this level of a beatdown, wouldn't be having him do this unless they were confident he was okay. You know, we got the press release with, you know, the long biographies of every neurologist who saw him and everything. So I thought, okay, I think we're fine. Just got to get used to this. And so I didn't get too nervous.
Interesting. Yeah, I couldn't avoid just like the weird pangs of, oh God, like I just really hope he stays healthy. But I mean, you have to put your trust in the physicians, and I guess that natural inclination to be a little bit nervous about it will just play in their favor as they head towards WrestleMania. I don't know if Daniel Bryan will be on TV next week. I think it might be a mistake if he isn't, but you know, in some form or another. But I'll be interested to see how heavily they lean on the fact that people are going to be a little bit, you know, worried for him as he goes into these first couple of matches.
I think maybe you bring Shane out and you have it, you know, Shane make the match, and then maybe you even have Shane and, you know, Shane get into it with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, and you have Bryan at the very end of the show make a save of some sort. I don't know that I'd give away too much more physicality with Bryan until WrestleMania. I do know, for one, I will probably be a bit of a mess when his music hits and he comes out in wrestling tights again. I think that's going to be a real special WrestleMania moment that is going to that is going to delight a lot of people.
Yeah, I hope they give him a real special, you know, WrestleMania entrance or something, or a video package, or I know they built something for him for Tuesday quickly at the beginning of the show that kind of highlighted some of the, you know, the peaks and valleys of his WWE career, and that was nicely done. But I think there's some, you know, there's some real special stuff that they can do with some of the video, especially if they have some of the home footage and stuff, you know, of that they probably film for Total Divas about him going through all of these struggles and doctor visits and everything else. So that's you know, that's something that I think they could put together that would make it feel even more special. Or maybe they'll save that for, you know, if he gets into a title match or something down the road, I don't know, but it's just an idea. But I'm curious where they're going with him post WrestleMania. You know, he's probably going to have to resign or something as the SmackDown general manager, do whatever it is he does to sign a talent contract with one of the two brands, or maybe he'll get the John Cena exemption and be a free agent. I don't know which direction they go, but I know he had always sort of leaned on, you know, he wanted to be the guy who was leading SmackDown. So maybe they'll just let him try to take on that role, or have him co, you know, share that role with Styles and Nakamura or whoever else is left behind.
I'd say whatever brand he ends up on, if I'm WWE, I do everything I can to put him on the same show as The Miz. That's the thing. And I'd probably do it on SmackDown because it does seem like there's a little more room to breathe on that show, even though it does have the worst possible head writer. And can I complain for a minute? I know we're talking about what's making us happy, but Road
Yeah,
Dogg
go ahead.
Books a show into the cuss wording ground for a year. Like, SmackDown has been pretty bad from beginning of 2017 to now. Books the show into the ground and gets bailed out at the last minute as it looks like that show is just a disaster, a wasteland. And gets bailed out by the last minute by the most at the last minute by the most popular star in WWE over the last decade, returning, being able to miraculously return to the ring. Like, come on. I wanted to see him fail.
That's like that's the level of seventh dimensional chess that Road Dogg is playing that we all didn't see coming. No, I have no. That's the default answer. It's like, oh well, you know, the super secret people in the know knew this was coming all along and all this other stuff. So, but
maybe for a
honestly,
couple weeks, they absolutely booked into a holding pattern from you know, just before the Rumble to now, to where you could say, okay, maybe they did have an idea all along, but they still, you know, there are far more compelling things they could have done with, like, the Fastlane show, that this was just garbage.
Yeah, I mean, if Road Dogg and whoever else on the SmackDown writing team ends up making Daniel Bryan boring, it will have completely soured me on WWE as a whole. Like, it would take a great effort to make a guy who probably has a decent amount of input on his own character as boring as he's made the rest of the show.
Yeah, and so I would probably say keep Bryan on SmackDown, bring The Miz over, and make that the first feud out of the gate for Bryan, probably without a title involved. And then, I mean, think I'd expect either Seth Rollins or Finn Balor to also move. Probably whichever one of them does not win the Intercontinental Championship moves to SmackDown. So you think that's a natural feud for Bryan at some point? Obviously, Bryan and Nakamura, I think, is the match you pencil in as the next dream match. Same thing with Bryan and Styles, as you know, you're kind of trying to piece together what his trajectory could be and where they could build him up to. And I think there are so many great matches with Daniel Bryan they could have in the next year. The WWE kind of needs to judiciously dole them out and let you anticipate and get ready for the next one, because the talent they've signed and debuted since Bryan went down 2 years ago, it's an insane list of people that it's like, I would love to see Bryan against them. I was texting a friend about it the other day, and I kept texting names. I'm like, this list doesn't end. I mean, Bryan against WWE, Samoa Joe, sign me up. Like, there are so many guys.
Yeah, those are the names that popped into my head as like, okay, if I had Braun Strowman, yeah. And I mean, Lesnar's gone, so that I know Bryan always wanted that match, but I don't know.
He's better not having it. We're all better for him not having it.
We don't need that many German suplexes and Lacey F5s.
If a man can have a bad match with Braun Strowman, I never want to see him wrestle again. That's the bar for me.
That's the bar. But I mean, you know, like if Finn Balor moves over to SmackDown, they better move, you know, the tag team, you know, Gallows and Anderson to reform Balor Club. That should be a leading heel faction on one of their television shows, and it's just been totally lost on Raw.
Like, you could boo a man with that many abs.
you'd be surprised, right? But you know, from my perspective, like, they've barely even touched what Carl Anderson can do, not only in the ring but on the microphone. Like, he's so talented, and they've blown it in a huge way with him.
Let's give him to Road Dogg.
Well, you know, maybe shake up the writers if you're going to shake up the shows too. Like, that would be helpful at some point too. But like, having a nucleus of talent around, you know, Bryan and Balor and Nakamura, and maybe AJ Styles is still there. I have a hard time believing they aren't moving him to Raw. But you know, The Miz, like, maybe Dean Ambrose comes back as a heel. Like, you know, those are the things that can get you excited about reviving a SmackDown brand if Bryan is there, because that'd be a great nucleus of people around him, or, you know, around that show that could fill up 2 hours really easily. Now, you know, it depends on if the booking changes or not, but like, those are the kinds of people I'd love to see him feud with right away. And if he's a free agent, then, you know, he can bounce around and feud with anybody. But I have a hard time believing, you know, that later on this year, probably not SummerSlam, because it would be too soon, but Bryan and Brie versus The Miz and Maryse has to happen at some point.
Yes, as Bryan would say. Yes, yes, yes. And maybe more Miz and Maryse just dress up as Bryan and Brie segments. I'd be down for returning to that Total Bellas parody. Hell, I would be down at some point for us to get maybe like Mixed Match Challenge 2 or some sort of exhibition mix tag, but I really want to see Bryan and Brie versus John and Nikki as well. I am going to go ahead and just say WWE should have a husband and wife tag team championship, like a mixed tag team championship, because, you know, Braun and Alexa, I don't see a reason to waste that chemistry.
Yeah, they have a lot going on. I mean, in terms of that mixed match challenge, while I haven't always been particularly excited by it, they've been doing some experimentation with the way that they've had, you know, the men and women interact. And I think they've, you know, they've hit on a couple of different, you know, areas. Like, you know, I think the way Jimmy Uso and Naomi were cutting promos together was kind of cute, fun. And obviously Braun and Alexa, you brought
Carmella up. Carmella and New Day?
Yeah.
My goodness.
The Miz and Asuka, like, yes. I mean, there's been a lot of successful chemistry building sorts of exercises happening there, even though the matches and the way that the whole tournament was paced out was probably not the best thing in the world. Like, they can use some of these lessons learned on the television shows and integrate the women and men's divisions in a way where, you know, the factions, if they exist, are actually interested in bringing the women's championship into their faction, that kind of thing. Like, that's stuff should be happening on these shows.
Like, I legitimately believe, God, we wander on this show a lot and it's delightful. I legitimately believe Carmella should be a member of the New Day at this point. I'm like, I'm full on with that. Just, you know, give them all the matching Carmella gear again and put her in that faction, because she's really, really fun as a part of that. And what else are they doing? They don't have her doing anything really all that delightful right now. Even if it does mix up the heel and baby face line a little, that's fine. You can lose Carmella on the heel side, and honestly, you're probably better for it. Jake, what's making me happy in wrestling this week is the opportunity to see the Golden Lovers live this weekend, because I live in Southern California, and that's where New Japan happens here about once a year these days. So I get to go to the Strong Style Evolved event on Sunday. And I've got to tell you, Jake, aside from Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi versus the Young Bucks, I'm disappointed in this card. As happy as I am to see that main event, and I will be overjoyed, the rest of the card is a bit of a letdown.
Yeah, they do a lot of tag matches. I'm not terribly thrilled with you know, like the other Bullet Club match, I think it's Skrull and Cody against the Gorillas of Destiny.
Yeah.
You know, minimal interest in that, to be honest with you. I'm sure the match will be good. You know, all four of those guys are super talented, but I'm just not as invested in the whole Bullet Club fracturing being the elite storyline as a lot of people seem to be online. I think it's worked well for what they've attempted to do with the Bucks and the Golden Lovers, but like, the secondary stories there just haven't really captured me. And Jay White and, you know, Paige, I'm just, you know, neither of them are particularly interesting to me, unless they're really looking for, you know, Paige to win here and, like, defend the championship over WrestleMania weekend against Ibushi on the ROH show. Like, that would be fun if this is just a gateway to something like that. But, yeah, there's just not – like, you're looking at the card and you're just like, yeah, I don't get the impression that people are coming here to put on their working boots and go out there and kill each other like they did last year for that tournament show in the U.S., which I think got them a lot of attention.
And I look at that tournament show in the U.S. and I go, this was a show mostly stocked with singles matches. It was kind of first half, a lot of tags, second half, your big singles matches. And I wonder if it's a mistake on the part of New Japan to kind of put on the standard New Japan show that they've been doing. Kind of, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see this show as it is in one of the smaller arenas they run in Japan, being one of the kind of the smaller, maybe it's a named pay-per-view, like a New Beginning, but not a big name, not, you know, Dominion or something that they really care about being great. This seems just like a bit of a throwaway show with two big matches and the U.S. title match, which doesn't feel as big as it should, because Jay White is not as important as he should be. And the Golden Lovers versus the Young Bucks match, which is well built up, it features New Japan's top U.S. star in Kenny Omega. Like, everything about that match really works, but that's the only thing that I feel is clicking on all cylinders on this card as I reflect on it. Now, Jake, do you feel differently about this show if Rey Mysterio hadn't gotten injured? Is Jushin Thunder Liger against Rey Mysterio a big enough match to kind of take the place of, to take that kind of third from the top? Now it's a stacked card.
You know, I think I would have really enjoyed it and wanted to see it, but it wouldn't have been a match that I would have been like, oh man, this is the one that's going to make me plunk down my cash. Like, I you know, Jushin Liger is a legend and is an amazing historical figure in wrestling, but he's certainly not what he used to be in the ring. And Rey Mysterio is kind of in the same boat, you know. Like, I just don't know what I would have expected from that match. I'm sure they would have worked out some fun stuff together, but I just don't think it would have been something that I would have gotten super excited for, on the level of, say, you know, if they had stuck with their guns after Wrestle Kingdom and gone with like Jericho and Naito or something like that.
Yeah, I feel like, and I think I've been lower on Chris Jericho in New Japan than most. I still have a bad taste in my mouth from his last WWE run that a lot of people that weren't me really liked. So, you know, my opinions are weird. But I look at like Jericho and Naito and go, that's a match that would have made this card feel really significant. You add Chris Jericho and Naito to this card already, and now you've got your great second from the top match that feels like a real main event as well. Because I think you do keep Omega and Ibushi against the Bucks on top, but Jericho and Naito would have been a really, really fun second from the top match. And to me, made this card matter more. I wonder, I have the worry that this card being at least shaping up, as I look at it on paper, I think this will be a little bit of a boring show, which, again, I'm not trying to be like mean to it. I'm really looking forward to this show, but I think it will be boring until the main event. And I look and I go, are they hurting themselves? I mean, the kind of talk after tickets went on sale for this show were they should have run a bigger building, one night only, 500 seats or 5,000 seats. They should have gone to a 10,000 seater. They should have gone to the Forum. They should have gone to another big arena in the area. I think Dave Meltzer said Staples Center a lot, ignoring, you know, WWE exclusive contracts on arenas and such. But they talked about it. It was talked a lot about how they should have run a bigger building. Does New Japan hurt themselves if they put on a kind of boring show this week, and then when they come back again, say later this year or at the beginning of 2018 or towards the beginning of 2018 or 2019, do they hurt themselves when they're trying to sell tickets again, where people go, okay, well, we're not going to buy it immediately. We bought tickets the day tickets went on sale last time and we were kind of bored.
I think it's a risk. I mean, especially when you have to think that a lot of the ticket sales were from the really hardcore fans who may be traveling a significant distance, purchasing things like plane tickets and, you know, rental cars and hotel rooms. And you end up with a rather expensive, you know, trip to watch a show that just didn't meet expectations. It might sour you on doing something similar again. You know, when they come back to Southern California or wherever they choose to run another show in the U.S. Next year, does that mean that you're going to have to really, you know, push tickets in the local market because you're going to have fewer people willing to travel? I mean, that's a possibility. I we'll have to see, you know, how the show turns out. If it, you know, looks like this on paper, but it actually, radically succeeds expectations,
yeah,
maybe it doesn't really matter, you know, but it, at least, you know, based on what we're looking at now, it does seem like it's kind of a one match show, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah. And I think part of that is that Rey Mysterio injury. I would say they probably took the risk that, hey, Mysterio is going to be our Chris Jericho on this show, and we don't need to dig into that Jericho well, and we can save Jericho and Naito for probably Dominion or sometime there. I would be not completely surprised if a surprise on this show is Jericho showing up and beating up Naito at the end of the Tanahashi, Dragon Lee, Kushida, and Taguchi versus Naito, Takahashi, Sanada, and Bushi tag match. Like, I think Naito gets taken out. Maybe a very memorable beating from Jericho just to kind of say, hey, he's here, and now we're going to build to, I think Dominion's in June, usually, or we're going to build to that Dominion match now, especially when you're thinking it's not flying Jericho over to Japan, which is, you know, a nice little cost savings for them.
Yeah, I don't know what is. I haven't looked at his tour dates for Fozzy or wherever to see if it's plausible for him to be there, but, you know, I would definitely think that if they're going to have that match, that, you know, they'd want to do something here because it would just ignite further fan interest in, you know, going out and getting New Japan World and actually getting to watch those matches as they happen.
So a further New Japan question here. Have you watched the finals of the New Japan Cup?
I sure did. Yeah.
So Zack Sabre Jr. wins. How do you feel about Zack Sabre Jr. challenging Okada?
I mean, the way that they positioned him is like the, you know, he's like the evil Okada. Like he's this arrogant, British foreigner who comes in, and he has the, you know, he even has the, you know, the talking piece. He has, you know, Taka doing the work for him on the microphone, a lot like Gedo is Okada's hype man. You know, he's just being positioned as a guy who he represents, you know, he's similar to Okada, but basically like his mirror image in a way.
What if he looked just like Okada but grew a goatee?
Like a Star Trek mirror in universe kind of thing.
That'd
be pretty funny. But I like his mic work. I think he had a series of very good matches in the New Japan Cup tournament. I mean, I think he still has a lot of the same issues that people talked about that sort of kept him from getting further in the Cruiserweight Classic in WWE, which was, you know, they weren't thrilled with the fact that he's 6 foot something and a beanpole. You know, he doesn't look like a heavyweight challenger in a lot of ways, and he gets a little bit too cute with submission sometimes in a way that looks kind of ridiculous. But you know, I still think over the last 6 months in New Japan, you know, since he's kind of gone on this latest run, he's looked great. So I'm all for him challenging Okada.
Yeah, I'd say from the G1 to right now, he's been a really compelling figure in New Japan, and I'm excited to see him challenge Okada. I will say that the challenge does not feel significant to me. I'm starting to get the feeling with Okada opponents that no one matters, and that's bumming me out, because there was a point where it was like every title defense, well, he could, but now they're on this record-breaking title run, and it's starting to feel like every opponent for Okada, well, yeah, of course Okada's going to win, and I don't know how you break that or how you bring back the anything can happen feel without Okada losing, because I think I would hope that they have a distinct opponent they want him to lose to and have it planned. And I would say it's probably Kenny Omega or Tetsuya Naito that he has to lose to. But it's feeling a little long in the tooth to where I'm not getting into the challengers anymore. And, Okada had a great match with Sonata that was fine. Like, it was a great match that I never thought the result would be different on. And I worry about that for the Zack Sabre Jr. match, too.
Does it feel like some of Cena's longer title runs to you? Like, I think the similarity is kind of there, where like it was just like you know they set up a new opponent with, you know, and they create as much adversity as possible in the intervening period between, you know, the challenge being laid out and the pay-per-view, and then it's just, you know, at the end of the show it's always Rainmaker pin, it's over, that kind of thing. Like,
yeah,
it just kind of feels like that to me.
It kind of reminds me of John Cena in 2007. They put him on that really long title run, I think from like beginning of 07 on, and like, or beginning of 2006 on, and like at a point John Cena had defeated Shawn Michaels a couple times and won, like they had a four-way match that was, I believe, Michaels, Cena, Edge, and I think Orton, maybe, like a four-way, yeah, at like Backlash that year. And yep, it was John Cena winning again. And at a point it was just like, man, they're putting a lot into Cena, and I get it, but this isn't that exciting. Like, this is letting me down a little bit, because it gets a little bit too predictable where you don't buy in anymore. And I like to think that New Japan kind of avoids that, but they have not avoided that thus far. And I'm curious to see if they do find a way to mix up Okada's title reign.
I hope they get there. I mean, I think Okada's been a magnificent champion. He's, yeah, had a lot of great matches, and you know, they always find a way to make his matches feel dramatic. And so I appreciate everything that he has done as the IWGP champion. But yeah, they only have maybe two or three matches a year with him that really feel like they're really big, and I hope they're able to get past that, or at least move the title onto somebody else temporarily and put him back in chase mode, which is where I think he found his stride as a character to begin with.
I think it's interesting because I think when he does eventually lose, and it may be Tokyo Dome next year that Okada loses the title, like we may not be all that close to Okada losing, I think he goes away for a couple months, and it be smart to like send him away so it's not like an instant rematch or anything like that, but let him recharge, and I'm sure let him heal a little bit, because this title reign I doubt has been friendly to his body The poor guy, like the everything he's putting himself through to have these amazing matches. Look at the amount of times he landed on his head against Kenny Omega as an example. But yeah, Jake, anything else you want to talk about this week?
Well, I guess one thing popped into my head about the New Japan card that we didn't really go over, which was that, you know, the Young Bucks are now have declared themselves heavyweights in the, you know, New Japan tag ranks. So do you think this match will be the beginning of a new style for them in New Japan in terms of how they approach this match? Like they, you know, they're typically known for working a rather loose, high-flying style, you know, especially in their indie matches. But, you know, we've seen them in the past in New Japan employ quite a few different match types. And sometimes they work like high flyers. Sometimes they work like a, you know, old NWA Southern tag team. You know, I guess I'm curious which direction they go with this one.
I think in this match, they're going to be trying to have the dream match with Omega and Ibushi that people have thought they were capable of for years. I think it's going to be the high-flying insanity that they're kind of known for, or that they're stereotyped for. But I also, because they're in there with Omega and Ibushi, and especially with Kenny Omega, I think they are going to have as their key goal, we're going to tell a kick-ass story, and that they are going to continue telling that story through the high-flying and through everything else. There's not a wrestler really that I trust more than Omega and the Bucks, like, to get a story across in a unique way.
Yeah, I think the challenge when you're doing a lot of the high flying and you know, and it kind of peppers throughout the match is like, how do you make it feel risky? Like that's, you know, so much of it is relies on, you know, very athletic spots, but also when they get going really quickly and fast and furious, there's like this sacrifice that has to be made between how much can you actually sell some of this stuff before you have to go into the next spot. Like how can they make some of the high flying moves feel risky? Because I think in a match like this, you're going to want to have, you know, as much drama as humanly possible. And if they get too cute with some of the high flying, I think it takes away from that. So I'm hoping they can find a balance.
Yeah, I hope they find that balance, and I hope it's really good. Like I just said, I think I just kind of, in a way, was the salesperson for that match, saying like, I trust these wrestlers as far as storytelling on their terms. But I mean that. I really think we're dealing with some generationally talented performers, and I think the Young Bucks, I want to say this is the first New Japan show, and especially the first major one that they have main evented, and I think they are going to pull out all the stops to prove that they belong in that spot.
I hope they succeed. I mean, I have really high expectations for that match in particular. It's just something I've wanted to see for years, so I hope they pull it off.
Yeah, and with that, I think we'll wrap it up. Jake, thanks for hanging out this week, man.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.